I'm Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Lisa Gregorian, president and chief marketing officer, Warner Brothers Television Group, and Tammy Gallahue, executive vice president, publicity and social media at Warner Brothers Worldwide Television Marketing. So Lisa and Tammy are the forces of nature that caused a seismic shift around the way television approaches San Diego Comic-Con, which kicks off this week, Wednesday, July 19th, with preview night and then goes all weekend long. The annual convention in San Diego once was mainly a gathering place for people who had a passion for comic books. Over time, it's grown into the major pop cultural event that it is today. Lisa and Tammy had big hands in that, especially around television's presence at the con. And so I wanted to talk to them today about building that presence. So hello, guys, and welcome. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thank you for having us.
So to kick things off, Lisa, why don't you just tell us what it is, and it's a very big job, but what it is you guys do at Warner Brothers, just so we get familiar with who you are.
So our group is responsible for the marketing of all of Warner Brothers television properties around the globe, and we work with broadcasters in 175 territories. We work with pay television clients, free television clients, SVOD players, and we work with them both on the marketing, the social, and the publicity of our shows.
Okay. So then when did you first become aware of Comic-Con, and what state was it in at the time? But by that, I mean, like, who were the predominant players at Comic-Con?
Right. So we've been going to Comic-Con for quite a while. I actually was a big fangirl, still am a big fangirl, and so is Tammy. Right, Tammy?
Oh, yes.
We start at a place of being fangirls, and Comic-Con was one of those things that we always wanted to participate. We had seen our sister division, DC Comics, participate in Comic-Con and felt that there was really a place for us as a studio to attend as well.
So that was DC Comics, but then were movies there yet or no?
Nobody was really on the floor. So people would take a movie or they would take a television show down and they would do a session with them, but they never had floor space. That was really reserved for the traditional publishing side of the business.
So did social media even exist at the time that you guys first started going to Comic-Con?
It really wasn't. It wasn't a way to get any type of ROI. Tammy?
No, it was very nascent. We were talking about well over 10 years ago. So it didn't exist. Twitter was maybe just sort of making a play.
So since you didn't have social media and you didn't really have movies going down there yet, not to mention TV, what made you think this is a good way to get attention for our shows? Because you didn't have that option of amplification like you do today.
Because we knew that the big fans and the evangelists were attending. And since it was the beginning of the social platform, since it was the beginning of that time, we knew that this was a great opportunity to get in front of them and present our shows. And even though it certainly is nothing like it is today, we knew that there was going to be some type of amplification.
There were also the start of the niche blogging community, mm-hmm. and we knew that they were down there as well. And that was when you were sort of seeing this groundswell at both traditional media and that sort of blogging community that was more fan-centric and niche also attending.
I think it's so crazy that 10 years ago, there wasn't even really Twitter yet. I think there was just Facebook. It's just weird because it's changed so much so fast.
The tools have changed.
I mean, drastically, right? You know, with Snap and Insta and live streaming and...
But I still go back to the basis of having these fans with a point of view with let's call it a following, with the ability to express their passion in such an authentic way, has existed all along. I think the tool set is different, but the fans themselves bring the same love and attention and passion for the projects that they did 10 years ago.
Yeah, if not more so. Do you guys remember any of the first shows that you took down there?
Ooh, definitely Smallville. Definitely Smallville was down there.
I think the funny part was how we were able to go, right? So we decided we were going to have a booth, and we didn't have a budget for it. So when you come from the studio system, you know, it's really a lot of it is about what have you done before, and that's how you establish your budget on an annual basis. We had a ton of items in our, let's call it our giveaway closet. And we had relationships with the people at DC who were doing DC Direct. We were buying below wholesale rates, sort of a family-friendly rate, an internal rate. We bought out, we had a store on our booth. And Tammy and I literally, in order to put this booth together, we sold merchandise out of the booth. That's how we paid for it.
Like, you guys were both sitting there selling merchandise?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because we believed in it. Yeah. And by
I
the
so
way,
I wish I was there
us,
to see that.
Yeah, and it's like, it's joyful for me. Like, one of the things that we always talk about is the staff that we bring to Comic-Con, they are joyful spending time with the fans. We enjoy it. We love it. It's a huge part of who we are. So that's what you get when you come to our booth. You don't have anyone who's there who is not there because they absolutely love being there.
So what
that's
did
why
that,
everyone attends.
What did that first booth look like? Because I know what the current booth looks like.
It had a center. Basically, it was all centered around the store. Essentially,
now,
that's what it was.
For people who are listening to this who have not been to Comic-Con, the Warner Brothers booth is like in the middle of the convention show floor. It's huge. It's a couple stories. You cannot miss it. So I just, but then I imagine you guys in like the Lucy, you know, of Peanuts booth with the 2 cents psychotherapy sessions, like sitting there selling stuff.
We were. And what was so amazing is a couple of years later, because it started to build like really quickly, the momentum started to build. And remember, like there's no space left on the floor. So if you, it doesn't matter how big you are today, if you try and get floor space, there is none.
Right.
So, you know, we were pretty early on when we got the size booth that we have as well. And a couple of years later, Barry Meyer, who at that point in time was the chairman of our studio, attended. And he was like, this is amazing. And we should be paying for this. And it was like, oh, my God, we love you. Finally, yeah. Like the studio sees, and that's when it all started to come together. We were like, what we really want to do is focus completely on giving stuff to our fans, never charging them for anything, making this the most fan-centric experience where we basically say to them, thank you so much for loving our product, our television series, our feature films, and everything all year, our games. And this is our thank you back to them. And that's what we've done ever since.
Was it after Barry Meyer came that you guys started bringing movies, or was that already happening?
They were already coming down. You know, it really depends. For theatrical, it really depends on the schedule. What are they releasing? They don't want to bring a movie down if they've released it a month before, right? So they're very schedule-based, or at least they were very schedule-based in those days. For us in the television area, you know, we have our May screenings, which you're aware of, where the networks pick up the shows in May. The writers' room basically is back up and running. So by the time we get to July, we can talk about either the new season or a new show that's coming up for the fall, because it just works perfectly with the timing of the television business overall.
And then do you remember, again, it's 10 years ago, so if you don't remember, it's fine. But do you remember any of those initial learnings that you took away that maybe surprised you or you didn't think were going to happen, but that you gained out of that first experience?
Well, I think when we got down there, I think it was fascinating to us that we sort of looked around and were like, you know, media is coming. It was sort of a learning of over a couple of years, but we did things very differently. But now it's sort of like there's a ton of media there. So we were like one of the first people to be like, it makes a lot of sense that we've got talent down here and there's a lot of media, so we should have a party. That seems so incredible, like incredulous now because everyone has a party.
Right.
But we were the first people to throw a party for the media down there because we were like, well, it seems odd to bring all of our talent down there. I think other things were too, is you sort of learn about like what the crowd liked, what the crowd didn't like, and what they responded to, what they didn't respond to.
So then did you anticipate from there that Comic-Con would become, I don't know if TV centric is the right way to put it, but when I've gone down, which has only been in the past 2 or 3 years, there's so much TV. I feel like TV is really almost taken over Comic-Con, but is that something you guys foresaw, or how do you think that came about?
You know, Tammy and I discuss this a lot because we're very particular about the shows that we bring to Comic-Con. So Because it fits with the timing of television, yes, there's a lot of television there. And theatrical is based on, you know, when are they planning to release the films, and whether or not, quite honestly, they have footage of the films, whether or not their talent is available. It's just it's a completely different scheduling situation for them and challenge than it is for us. But there's a lot of shows that we look at and say, huh, we wouldn't bring that show. Like, that's not really for us what we would consider to be a show that belongs at Comic-Con. And that, you know, that's just from our experience, from our point of view. But we do find that producers want to go. So oftentimes, you know, Tammy can speak to it, you know, we're telling more producers that we don't feel their show is the right show for Comic-Con than trying to get them to actually attend.
That sounds because like a fun conversation.
Well, but to your point, Paige, there's more television than ever, right? There's more distribution. There's more content than ever. It's not a secret that it's sort of the golden age of television, and there's a lot more niche television or genre-based television as well. So everyone wants to go. It's a really hot, it's a champagne problem to have. But sometimes we know that things will get lost because not every show, right, to Lisa's point, belongs there. We know from the ROI and the press that we get, because we track all of that, that sometimes it's just not worth it. We'd rather do something different where they can stand out than get lost in that noise.
It seems like that's a harder equation to figure too now. You know, what are really strategically our best plays that we're going to take down there?
We know because we track it. So we know what kind of shows perform well there, and we know what kind of shows don't perform well there.
And we've had conversations with producers and said, look, we know you want to go. We know you think your show belongs. We've taken your show year after year. Let us show you the actual media value, the earned media value that we got against your show. We want to show you with all that effort what it took and what we actually got in the end. Because if we're going to spend money and we're going to look at this as a promotional opportunity, there's a lot of things we can be doing to support shows. We don't have to take them to Comic-Con. Comic-Con is really about a fan-centric, fan-first point of view, and it might not be the right place for a particular show because their fan base is, it's not that they're not there, but they could be focused on all the other bright, shiny objects that they're in love with.
It just used to be a place where, like, some of those genre shows weren't getting love in traditional press. Now they do, but that wasn't the case that, you know, 10, 11 years ago. So that was a place where they actually could get love and have that sort of experience. And there was fandom and there was press, but not, you know, but traditional media often didn't cover them. It's changed a lot.
I mean, don't you think it's interesting that in the past 10 years and sooner, really, but what we've seen happen with genre? I mean, the two biggest shows on TV, I would argue, The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones, are pure genre plays.
I thought you were going to say Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory, too, actually. That's a very good point. And that has a big presence down there and always has. So, but do you think that Comic-Con contributed to that explosion of genre?
Well, it's interesting. I think Lisa and I should tell you, like, you know, if you today assume that Big Bang Theory is always gone to Comic-Con. This is a really interesting backstory about it. We didn't take it in year one, and it was really a conversation in year two. We had deep discussions, like, does this show belong at Con? Now you would think, oh, that's crazy. Of course it does. But we talked with the people. We also have a really good relationship with the people who do the programming at Con. And we were like, what do you think? Do you think people will be receptive? Do you think they'll be responsive? Like, are we going to go down there? No one's going to be in the room. We went down there and they were like, yes, we think it's going to work. But it wasn't just a, like, automatic at that time. But
I think
it truly did help Bang.
It's like a meta show for Con because they're fans of Comic-Con. And it's part of the show, so it's sort of an interesting thing and a really fun thing to put Big Bang at Comic-Con.
But now geeks are chic, and it's cool, and it was a little different at that time.
Yeah, no, 100%. All right, so here's the core question, which is, of the things that you can talk about right now, what are you guys doing at Comic-Con this year?
A lot. There are some things we can talk about, some things that we'll share with you afterwards.
We'll be surprised at in San Diego, yeah.
Yeah, and part of the surprise is that we're just trying to deliver a great fan experience, which is why we're not sharing it early. But we are bringing 20.
20.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
20.
Sorry, 21 last year, 20 this year.
20 goes this year. I think that'll give your listeners a sense of the...
But you know what?
We have shows that we're screening that we aren't necessarily doing a session on.
How many of those are produced by Greg Berlanti?
Five? Or
five. Okay. That's only 25%.
Yeah, five. So we are bringing, you know, there's a lot of returning shows, and those are the ones that perform really well for us because they already have existing fan bases. You know, and you've got the big players. You've got Arrow and Flash and Gotham and Supergirl, the ones that, you know, there's no question that they belong there, Big Bang Theory. One of our biggest sessions is Hall H on Sunday for Supernatural. Those are the most incredible fans. So also, again, for your listeners who aren't aware, Hall H has 6,500 people in that hall. That's how many people
it's terrifying.
Are there.
And it's a terrifying place.
And it's pretty amazing. Like they actually have porta potties into that room inside the convention center because there's so many people there.
Yeah. Never leaving.
Never leave. Because once you have your seat, you can stay for the day. So people plant themselves there and never leave the room.
Yes.
And then we've got, you know, our Teen Titans Go, which is a huge animated hit for us, to Mike Tyson Mysteries on Adult Swim. I mean, you know, it is really all over the map, but we believe that every single one of our shows that attends really has a place there.
And if you want to see a really fun way to see our schedule, you can go online and search for our video that we did surrounding our release of our times and panels and dates.
Oh, awesome.
Spoiler alert.
I can include it with my story.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, it has puppies in it.
Yeah.
All videos should have puppies in it. I know you guys are doing...
Sorry, Paige. Some of the other stuff that we're doing that you might find interesting. We are the official bag of Comic-Con. We have been for the last few years. In fact, we weren't the official bag, and we used to hand out our huge bags at our booth, and it created such a sensation that eventually Comic-Con came to us and said, all right, you can sponsor the bag. It was very generous of them to allow us to pay them to give the bags away.
Did you ever see us giving the bags away on the booth? Because that was some of the craziest stuff ever. We would be up on that, like, we were folding and handing them out, and it was like locust descending on the booth to, like, grab a bag. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty
super
amazing.
Fun.
It was fun, but it was super crazy. So we've got 20 different versions this year. The bags range the gamut from, you know, The Flash and Gotham to Justice League action, and we have some Warner Brothers feature films as well, like the Justice League movie. So we have a tremendous amount of bags. We produce 135,000 bags that are distributed at the convention through the registration desks.
Do people fight over the bags, or do they just sort of take what they get
them
and
now.
Trade?
So we'll give you. Can I tell her about what we're doing with the bags this year?
You should, and just
all right.
The evolution about it.
Okay. So every year we try and do something again. The element of surprise, but like a wonderful serendipitous surprise, is really what we're looking for. So we've played with the bags a lot, and we eventually turned them into backpacks. I'm a huge lover of backpacks, if you know anything about
I said
like,
cape backpacks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a cape backpack, and we've done like really unusual stuff. This year, every single bag has a pin, a DC Comics character pin, that is like in a little clear pocket on the front of the bag.
Wow.
Yeah. So people trade the bags. They go to the convention. They see someone with a bag. They're a huge fan. I'm going to say, let's say I'm a huge fan of the Big Bang Theory, and I've got a bag for, you know, a great product, but I'm not that fan. And people trade a lot at the convention. Now we're hoping that not only are they going to trade bags, but that they will also trade pins. And part of that for us is we see Comic-Con as a big community, a community of people who you have conversations and you meet and talk to everybody at that convention. And that's part of, you know, you're waiting online for a couple of hours. You've got your bag. You've got your pin. You start to talk to, oh, my God, I can't believe you have a Supergirl pin, for example. And it's just a great way for people to bond and have conversations. And, you know, it's an amazing, amazing few days in San Diego.
I also think people think they can sort of create fandom, but we've always sort of felt like we can, like, we sort of just, like, slide into fandom and see what's happening.
And support it.
And support it. And it's just, like, our bags were being made into costumes. So after we first started handing out the bags, we came back the next year and we saw fans had created costumes out of it. And instead of saying, oh, like, great, we're going to do that, we actually went to the fans and said, oh, you guys are already making these costumes. Hey, can you come on our booth? Can we put you on the news? Can you make some for us? Instead of sort of supporting them in their sort of creativity.
And what I think is interesting, you know, is I read a lot of the comment sections across Comic-Con, and there was an article that came out in the last couple of days in one of the trades about how many parties there are at Comic-Con. And some of the comments were, yeah, but they're all by invitation only. And one of the things that Tammy and I have always made a very conscious effort to do is, even though, I mean, it is a press party, we have all of our talent there, so, you know, we're cautious, to say the least, we do invite those mega fans. So these people that have been designing costumes from our bags are invited every single year to our party. There are those, you know, those moments where we embrace the fandom and we include them in these very, very, very special moments that they wouldn't necessarily have an opportunity to participate in.
Yeah, and let's be clear, like, there are fire codes. There could only so many people can fit in these parties, and there are 150,000 people in San Diego.
But when you're that kind of fan, like, to us, I mean, you know us, like, the first time I remember when we would see people, and it was like so, what was so random, Paige, for us was that it wasn't like one group of people decided to take our bags and make costumes. It was like people were coming from all over. Like, it was like, do you know so-and-so? Nope, never heard of them. But they were all doing the same thing, completely different styles. One of them is like Renaissance medieval style. Another one is like could walk a runway in Paris. Another, they all had very different, but they all had the same idea, which was to take the bags and turn it into a costume that they could wear at the event. And that to me is like just so brilliant and beautiful and special.
All right. So for listeners at home, which is everyone, who don't know Tammy, I just want everyone to know that she is quite a fashion plate and wear of designer dresses and amazing shoes. And I want you to imagine Tammy at the booth in her 4-inch Manola Blahniks handing out bags for a second. But also, Tammy, my dream for you is that a designer will make a dress for you out of the bags. I think that would just be amazing.
Lisa and I have blazers.
We do.
I
think I've seen you in a t-shirt at Comic-Con, actually, but it's the only time. So this is sort of an obvious question, but I just want to hear your thoughts on it, which is, so you started 10, 11 years ago. Social media was just beginning. Now social media is such a part of Comic-Con. How important for Warner Brothers is social media to what you're doing at Comic-Con?
Anybody who would tell you it's not important, you wouldn't believe. Right. But I think it just depends on what you're talking about. We do our own social media. Media outlets are doing their social media, and the fans are doing their social media.
It's critical. The whole point is to deliver a great fan experience, and then the way that we find out whether or not, and we're sort of judged by whether or not the experience was successful, is through the social media and the discussion that takes place afterwards. And that's really how we find out how successful or unsuccessful we were. And then we look at that as earned media and have analytics behind the insights on whether or not we performed, you know, above our grade.
We're also thinking about it because we know things are going to be shared instantaneously. So we're like, what can we break there? What can we do that's different there so people will talk about it?
You know, and it's a very different animal now because of social. You know, there's things that you wouldn't even think about, Paige, like we have to make sure our music's cleared. We have to make sure, like, all of these things have to now be something that we're ready for it to go wide and we're ready for it to be taken out because we can't hold it for the room, let them have a moment of being in the room and experiencing it. But then after that, it's really hard to say that can't go anywhere.
Yeah, 100%. And do you feel like you have a pretty good sense of what's going to play on social media? Or do you feel like every year you're surprised by something that just takes on a life of its own?
I don't believe we're ever super surprised. I think if anything, we're more surprised when something doesn't take off that we sort of we're hopeful for. But I'll give you an example. When we, when Wolowitz from Big Bang Theory went to space in the season, and we, this was hilarious because Tammy and I were convinced that we wanted to give away a trip to space to one of the fans at Comic-Con. And it was so crazy that we were calling people to find out who they knew and whether or not they knew, like, the Virgin Galactic people. Like, we were literally trying to call everybody. And we were able to secure a trip to space. And we gave it away to a fan at Comic-Con during the Big Bang Theory session. And Tammy and I were two of the people that would bring the fans over to the side and say, are you 18 years of age? Are you an American citizen? Like, you know, go through the thing. Okay, you are. Okay, now go over here because we're going to have a contest and you're going to participate. They were pretty hands-on, I got to say.
Yeah.
And the ROI that we received from that,
much.
Tammy can speak to it.
I mean, it was in the millions. It might be even close to like 5 million now. It was crazy.
Wait, did somebody go to space?
She's in training.
She's in training, and they actually named the spacesuit after her, the female version of it, because she was, it's crazy.
And she was so amazing. She was there for the first time, and she was with her sister.
Yes. And we couldn't have picked a better candidate to win. She's
a mother of three.
You know, she doesn't ever take time for herself, and this is one of the most exciting things that ever happened to her in her life. So it was.
And she's going to go to space.
Yeah.
I feel like how did I not know about this already? So let's recap. So you did a contest through the big, because when Wolowitz went to space was several seasons ago, right?
Yes.
So okay, yes. So that happened. Let's say 3 years ago.
3 or 4.
Yeah, it was like 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay, so since then, she's been in training, and then she's going to go and, like, a Virgin. Like, what company is taking her to space?
It's called X-Corp. And actually, she's been on I can't think of the technical name for it, so I'll say the sort of other name for it. She's been in a vomit comet, as they call it, mm-hmm. where you do the super fast, like, training out in the desert. So, kind of fun.
That is really cool. When is she going to space? Is it scheduled yet?
As soon as they start sending people to space, I think that's the big question.
They're all testing right now, right? So it's all about making sure that it's safe.
Right.
But, you know, and the life for that is great because CNN covered it. We had a lot of outlets that covered it. But, you know, for us internally as a company as well, CNN is part of Time Warner. Warner Brothers is part of Time Warner. And they were able to cover it not just for the broadcast on CBS so that we would get that publicity and that earned media, but also it plays on TBS. So by going back and revisiting the story, they were able to cover it for those runs when they were on TBS as well.
That's really interesting. That does, now that I think about it, I'm like, you're right. People have not gone to space yet as visitors. I remember that now. But that's an amazing promotion. You'll have to keep me updated on when she actually goes. All right. So leaving that amazing activation, but going on to other activations. So one thing I think that's been really interesting about Comic-Con is sort of that, the rise of the activation. To me, that's really what started this idea of taking television marketing on the road and creating amazing experiences for people. And it's sort of, I feel like the center of it is Comic-Con, but now you're seeing it expand to like South by Southwest, the other Comic-Cons in other states. And other events. Do you guys see it like that? Like Comic-Con started that? And then do you
I think it started when Fox, many, many years ago, started bringing their young teen shows to the malls.
Okay.
That's when I think it really started. And they started pushing out these, you know, relatively unknown actors who, you know, tens of thousands of young kids would show up in the mall screaming and yelling for 90210 and Melrose Place and whatever it was that they were launching in those days. And that's when you started to understand that, you know, these people are in your living room on a weekly basis and that the viewers and fans really have a connection with them that goes, I don't want to say deeper than a feature film connection, but it's pretty deep when week to week you're growing up alongside characters, right? So I always use Gilmore Girls as the great example of you grew up with Rory and you went to college at the same time as Rory. You got your first car at the same time as Rory. Your first, you know, it's sort of like you went through life with her. And so that's such a unique and distinct part of the world of television storytelling.
Do you think that, do you attribute that then to this expansion of television marketing that we've seen to places like South by Southwest and all sorts of other, there's like the Atlanta Television Festival and all sorts of other places? Do you, is that what you attribute that to?
You know, I think it's very interesting. South by Southwest, which we've gone to and we've done activations there and we've taken shows there, are very, it's a very different crowd, right, that goes to South by or that goes to ATX. So you're hitting a very different sort of fan or viewer or consumer, whatever you want to say, when you go to those things. I think it's all, I think there's a rise of experiential just in general, because there's so much, there's so many shows out there that you need something to stand out. And I think that that is one of the ways that you can, if you can create a great experience around your show, regardless of where it is. But those are places that obviously people look to. New York Comic Con as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, which is it is so hard to stand out. So I feel like you end up with, I don't know about crazier, but more and more elaborate activations, definitely. And looking at what's coming to Comic-Con this year, I'm seeing a fair amount of that, which is interesting.
Elaborate doesn't mean good. Elaborate
right.
doesn't mean that it's a great fan experience.
I agree.
Elaborate, like,
yeah, I agree.
Fans are, we actually go through, we're working on one right now, where we're going through beat by beat when we think the room is going to applaud or scream, or like we're trying to understand if we can help with the rhythm of the responses.
Mm-hmm. And can you? I mean, is that something you can really anticipate?
We'll let you know. We're pretty good at it.
We're pretty good at it because I think we're fans ourselves. We're not people who are just like, oh, it, you know, it would be fun to go to South by, or it would be fun to go to Comic-Con. It's like we've experienced those things. We know it works there. And you hope that the people that are marketing and doing publicity for your shows, I think it's something we all have in common. We love television. We love our shows, you know. And it's interesting, too, the talent loves going to Comic-Con because they're fans themselves, maybe of another show or different people. And we've often had some of our talent say, oh, can you introduce me to X because I love them. So it's kind of an, you know, Lisa always says it's an event without a red carpet in many ways.
There's no stanchions.
I've been to events at Comic-Con with talent where, I mean, the talent is like royalty. Like the fans are just losing their minds. I feel almost a little scared for the talent, but I mean, everything goes fine. But I mean, it is really, the passion is incredible.
We have security.
All right, you guys. Last question. What are you most excited for at Comic-Con this year?
We know.
Yeah.
You know, but you can't tell me.
Yeah. Sorry. You know what a good question is?
No, tell me.
What are we fans of? What are we fans of that aren't necessarily Warner Brothers?
Mm, that's a good question.
All right. What?
I'm a huge Walking Dead fan. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan. Lisa and I definitely share that in common.
I'm a Peter Dinklage. Like, I love him.
I can't express that my Game of Thrones love, like, how crazy I am right now. We could do a whole separate thing
about
that.
I just started from the beginning again.
I did, too. It's so crazy.
It's so good. And I love the Walking Dead, but Tammy loves it more.
But Game of Thrones is a cheat because it's HBO, which is Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
well, it's not our show, though. It was like, I love anything that has a good either a zombie or a vampire or something in it that I'm just like beyond thrilled about. I love all the horror, genre horror and like really like high octane action. This is Warner Brothers, but I made Lisa take me to the Mad Max premiere.
I like Stranger Things.
Stranger Things. Oh, so good.
Coming back soon.
Yep. So we're fangirls.
There's a really great show called 3% that actually Chuck Lorre turned me on to, and it's very interesting because it kind of parallels our show The 100, which I also love, but it's a Brazilian series. So if anybody hasn't checked that out, I would definitely check that out.
Where do you find that, Tammy?
You find it on Netflix.
Look at us touting Netflix.
Okay. I know.
We won't
and while you're there, check out our DC shows and Riverdale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Riverdale coming to Comic-Con?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, you guys, I'm going to wrap it up, but thank you so much for your time. I'm really looking forward to seeing you at Comic-Con and seeing everything that Warner Brothers has got for us. It's going
to
be exciting.
Look forward to seeing you, too.
Thank you, Paige.
Bye, Paige.
Thanks. Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.